Dexter, you ready? You may rise and address the court on behalf of Bruce Marksdale.
Thank you. My name is Edward Grutzner, and I represent Mr. Martindale, who was the plaintiff in the trial court and now is the petitioner. He was the... The case involves the exclusion of evidence. The jury found that Mr. Martindale was not injured in an automobile collision. The facts are simple. He was 6 feet 7 inches tall and stopped at a red light when he was struck from the rear by a fully loaded garbage truck of the city of Beloit. The city has admitted that the driver of the garbage truck was negligent and that Mr. Martindale was not negligent. Mr. Martindale's head was thrown first back and then forward. His car was thrown forward. He struck a car ahead and he ended up 100 to 150 feet from where he was struck. And the damage to his car exceeded some $9,000. The issue, of course, was causation and damages. Mr. Martindale was examined by a Dr. Ryan, who is an associate professor at the medical college at the University of Wisconsin. And that doctor examined Mr. Martindale twice, concluded that he had suffered damage in the automobile collision and permanent damage to his temporal mandibular joint. And of course, when you start, you don't know where that is. Well, the doctor explained in some detail that the temporal mandibular joint is the joint that hooks the jaw onto the skull. And within that joint, there's a disc. Within each one of them, there's a disc. And that's similar to the discs in the spine. So that when the jaw of a lawyer or anybody else works, why, it works on this disc. We brought a lawsuit. We claimed damage to the discs of the jaws primarily. He had a whiplash injury, which was basically not so significant. And the claim included Mr. Martindale's claim for concern regarding future surgery. Now, it becomes important that this evidence was, certain evidence was excluded because in the opening argument, counsel for the city said Martindale could get rid of any problem pretty easy by surgery. And in closing, his answer was, Martindale has offered an in closing, counsel said, and I quote, neither of them, Dr. Ryan or the dentist Clark, made any attempt to describe how it is that his jaw problem resulted from the accident. So we have framed the issue of causation in the argument of counsel, and then the jury found that they answered two questions. One was any injury caused as a result of the collision, and they found no. Second question, how much would fairly compensate him for his personal injury sustained in the accident, $6,100. Well, we argued on motions after that was indicated the jury was confused and the judge entered judgment for the defendant for the costs. This appeal deals only with the exclusion of evidence. And there are really two types of evidence. Ma'am.
Justice Prosser has a question.
Excuse me, ma'am.
Justice Prosser has a question.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you, sir.
As you began to recite the facts and talked about the accident, you talked about the drivers, the plaintiff's head going forward and backward or backward and forward. I've forgotten which one.
Yes, sir.
Is that in the record?
It is in the record that Mr. Martindale testified to it. It is not in the record that the doctor was aware of the motion of the neck. Do I answer your question?
Was the doctor aware that there was whiplash, what was known as whiplash?
The doctor understood it was a whiplash injury.
Well, does whiplash mean the motion of the head?
Certainly does, ma'am. Certainly does.
So there's sort of a disconnect, is there, between what the doctor knew and what the plaintiff testified? Is that...
Very little. The plaintiff perhaps testified in more detail, but what the doctor knew was rather extensive. And I can go into that point. The doctor knew, and I'll refer, if I may, to the record of page 63 of Dr. Ryan's deposition. And it was a case where the deposition was introduced in evidence, not the live testimony of the doctor. Page 9, Dr. Ryan said that he knew that Mr. Martindale had been hit from the rear by a garbage truck, that Mr. Martindale suffered a whiplash injury, that Mr. Martindale noticed a clicking not in the jaw not long after the collision, and that Martindale testified, Dr. Ryan knew that Martindale said he had not had this injury before the collision. At page 10 of the Dr. Ryan's deposition, he said he felt a clicking with his hand. He palpated it. At page 14, he said that Martindale reported pain in the jaw, both left and right, following the injury. At page 15, Dr. Ryan noticed that there was a popping of the jaws, that Martindale had muscle pain chewing foods, and Martindale had given the collision as the origin of these problems. The doctor knew, and this is page 16 now, that Martindale had used a splint and anti-inflammatories following this injury, and it had been prescribed by his dentist down in Beloit. Dr. Ryan knew, and this is page 17, that Martindale had described to him a gradual increase in pain since the collision. Dr. Ryan knew that Martindale had been seen at the emergency room in the Beloit Hospital. Dr. Ryan knew that Martindale's teeth had been chipped in the collision. Martindale had told Dr. Ryan that his jaw had clashed together at the time of the collision. Martindale told the doctor that he now had a clenching problem. He had a tight feeling, and his jaw was snapping, and that he had used an upper hard splint and mouth guards. That was at page 17. At page 18, the doctor determined that Martindale's teeth were sensitive, the jaw was tight, and he had limited range of motion. Page 19, at the clinical examination, he found both limited mobility of the jaw and also what he called hypermobility. That is to say, on one side it was loose, and on one side it was tight. Then page 20, and there are only two more, the doctor examined Martindale and found that his ability to protrude the jaw was reduced, that there was a deviation. That is to say, when he stuck his jaw forward, it didn't go straight forward, but it went to the side, and concluded that a disc was out of place. And page 21, there was a catching on the left side of the jaw. And at page 35, Dr. Ryan testified that he knew that the Martindale was driving a Bonneville automobile and that the headrest was too low to brace his head when the vehicle was struck from behind, and that Martindale was 6 feet, 7 inches tall. It is those things that Dr. Ryan knew about the collision, Your Honor.
Now, what length... I'm sorry, go ahead. I want to know what exact testimony was excluded. Everything you've said so far has been allowed before the jury, right?
That's the testimony.
Right.
Now, your question is, what was excluded?
Right.
All right.
Page 35, he says, I also know that he testified that his headrest was too low for his head and that this would depict what could happen in the whiplash injury, and I have no other reason to believe that he had an injury to his jaw other than the whiplash injury in this accident. Since I've already testified that I think the accident caused this problem, this is the mechanism of, I believe, causes internal joint derangement.
That's correct. That was excluded by the trial court.
How far? The Bonneville?
He began, the exclusion began previously to that. If we look at, the exclusion began on page 31 of that sequence. The question, all right, doctor, I'll show you exhibit number 9, a form apparently in your file, entitled Post-Operative Complications. Is that correct? That's correct. The caption at line 19 was Post-Operative Complications. That was objected to. And I asked, Post-Operative Complications of what, doctor? The obvious answer, that's surgery. Then, next page 32, line 4.
Was everything excluded on 31?
Everything that I read to you, Justice Abrahamson, the first 7 lines were not excluded.
Okay.
Then on page 32, this entire page was excluded from the testimony.
And on this page, they were talking about surgery, possible surgery afterwards.
Yes, it describes the document, number 9, which describes the post-operative complications following surgery. And that is an exhibit within the doctor's file. It was not completed, of course, because surgery was not had. Apparently, it's placed there whenever the doctor's file is prepared. But on line 7, the doctor said, it was post-operative complications of the temporal mandibular joint. This comes as part of a clinical examination. There are several pages and so on. And if we do surgery, we fill a form out, and this is used for research, basically. My question, does this measure the type of problems that may occur following operation of the temporal mandibular joint? Answer, yes. Did you discuss any of these with Mr. Martindale? Answer, I probably discussed all of them. That evidence was excluded from the trial. You see,
this goes to your issue of how much damages, is that right?
Yes, it goes to the concern that Mr. Martindale had over the possible surgery in the future.
Distress. All right.
And then the next item was number 10. And it was post-operative findings at 6 months. And this also was excluded. The purpose, and he explains it, after 6 months, we re-evaluate the patient from a clinical standpoint to see if we've made any changes in his pain, in his range of motion, and so on. Then that was excluded. And continue on page 33 at the bottom. Line 22, doctor, I'm showing you has been marked as exhibit number 11 and ask you if you reviewed this drawing before it was made so big. Yes, I have. We had a large jury diagram. Question on, and this is also excluded now on page 34. All of page 34 was excluded.
The diagram with the three head positions?
It showed the head straight up, it showed the head back, and it showed the head forward.
Right.
And it had a diagram of these discs within the joint in order to show to the jury this basic question, which everyone would have in a whiplash. How could you possibly injure discs in your joint if, in fact, you had a whiplash?
Now, this diagram goes to cause.
It would help the jury understand how the impact from the rear caused damage to the joints of the jaw. And on page 34, then, this was entirely excluded. Did you review it for accuracy to see whether or not it was accurately reflected the mechanism of the whiplash-related internal disc injury regarding Bruce Martindale? Answer, yes. My first question, in your opinion, is this an accurate representation of the mechanism of whiplash-related internal disc injury? Answer, yes. There was an objection.
There's an objection because there wasn't foundation. I don't think there's any foundation that the witness has any idea how this witness, that's a victim.
He meant to say accident.
Accident occurred.
Yes.
So how do you answer that?
And that's why, because of that objection, that's why I've read to you all of the things the doctor, in fact, knew about how the accident occurred.
Well, does he have to know what was the driving speed of a garbage truck?
Unfortunately, that was never in evidence.
Well, does he have to know that for the mechanism? Does he have to know how heavy the loaded garbage truck was so that the impact on and how light or heavy a Bonneville is so that he can evaluate this? Or is it a general concept of if you're hit from the rear and your head goes this way, whether it goes at, X number of feet a second or...
So. I do not believe that a doctor is required to know the speeds or the weights, anything else. He should be able to conclude that this collision caused the injury. In fact, we tried to put in the weight of the garbage truck, and the judge excluded that.
If I understand this, then you are saying that if a doctor knows that the head has been moved forward and back, not voluntarily by the victim, and at some speed, unknown speed, an unknown extension of how far back it went and how forward, that he can testify that any kind of movement that way might have caused this defect.
Well, that alone might not be sufficient.
Okay.
On the other hand, this Mr. Martindale went to the hospital. His teeth were chipped. He described the other condition that he had, and from that point forward, he began to have these problems that he had not had previously.
Okay, so then he's going to say, as a result, looking at these problems and knowing that his head was moved, but I don't know how far forward, I don't know how far back, I don't know the speed at which it was moved, I don't know how many times exactly it was moved, but we know it's gotten moved, because that's what happens when you're hit from the rear.
Yes.
And so I, physicians say, looking at the fact that there was this movement, jolted movement, and these are the results, I can say that to a degree of medical certainty, this movement of the head caused the results.
That's what he said, and I believe he's entitled to say that, Your Honor.
And the judge said what?
The judge excluded it. Now, the language
used by the judge is...
Mr. Gretzler, you get your material, but then talk when you're in front of the microphone, please, so that we can tape it.
The judge has given various reasons regarding the exclusion of evidence. And I would refer... lose it all here. If we look at the record number 54...
the transcript of one of the hearings prior to trial for the purpose of excluding the evidence.
I'm sorry, just before you get there, how many pages were excluded? You talked about 35. Was it all 36?
More than that.
37?
There were exclusions rather much throughout. Let's see. There were two primary areas of exclusion. The page 31 that you inquired about.
I think you left off of page 34.
And that excludes through page 34, through page 35, through page 36, And through line 9 of page 37.
Okay. That included testimony as to whether, do you have an opinion as to whether or not that is what occurred in the injury, that is this movement? And he said yes.
He said yes. That was excluded. Now, there was another line of testimony that was further excluded. And if we look at page 43, beginning on page 42, now we're talking, previously we were talking about describing how the collision occurred and how there was damage to the joints. Now we are concerned with complications that might occur should surgery be had.
It might help us if you just stayed on one causation and then moved to damage.
All right.
If you can't get over the causation hurdle, you never get to damages, Mr. Gretzky.
Well,
right?
Yeah, but they are closely related in that
Mr. Gretzner, you have to stand in front of them.
I believe they're closely related because the causation question is indeed intertwined with the question of damages regarding concern over the future.
Counsel, if I may, Chief, are you finished?
The Court of Appeals affirmed the trial court.
Yes.
And the Court of Appeals in paragraph 8 of its slip opinion stated, all Ryan knew about the accident was that Martindale was driving a car with a headrest too low for his head, and the car was struck from behind by a garbage truck. Now I get to the important sentence. Apparently, he never inspected Martindale's car or a similar model and knew nothing about Martindale's movement or what happened to him or the car at and after the moment of impact. Is it your belief that this expert, Ryan, should have been able to testify regarding the mechanics of the injury to the jaw without going to inspect the car or without having knowledge about the movements and forces upon impact in the car?
First, having to inspect the car. That would be the first time I've understood that a doctor was required to go out to the wreck and make an inspection of the vehicle. I don't see any reason why that would be required. I don't understand that. The second question is whether or not the doctor should have known more about the mechanics of the head. He did know that the fella suffered a whiplash. He did know that the fella went to the hospital, that he had chipped his teeth, that the injury was severe enough to cause that.
Well, no, what I read was he knew nothing about Martindale's movements or what happened to him in the car at or after the moment of impact.
He didn't testify that he knew more. He testified that when he first met with Martindale, they had an interview, and he had asked him questions, and the doctor was satisfied that he had a whiplash.
Let me get to the issue. You learn lots as you're sitting and preparing for these cases, and apparently this is, and I may quote, a hot-button issue. What can be testified to by the medical expert? And indeed, just in the last, earlier this morning, pulled off the internet, there's a lot of articles on this issue. August 2000, a trial magazine, lots of trial articles on this, dealing with needing the expert in crashworthy tests. in other words, what's going on with the car, or low-impact collisions and the need to have biomechanic experts to study the forces to necessary to cause the particular response. Maybe the need to have, this is a new one for me, occupant kinematics, who is an expert who testifies concerning the movements of people during a collision sequence. In this type of a case, is it necessary that there be an expert to testify regarding the biomechanics of the accident?
I think not.
And why not?
Because the doctor who is a professor and who treats with this kind of damage to the jaw, it's qualified to give an opinion as to the cause of this kind of damage to the joints of the jaw. That in this injury where the head is thrust backward and forward and had not had it before, is capable of concluding in his opinion, as he said, that he was sure or he had testified that it was causal. It seems to me that establishes a sufficient qualification for that person to give an opinion.
Do you think you have the authority to cite that it is legal error for the trial, for the Court of Appeals to indicate that the doctor need inspect the car or know more about the, let me put, biomechanical movements? Is there anything you have to cite with regard to that premise?
I cannot cite a case to you on that point. I've never seen one where the doctor went out and looked at a wrecked car. I've never heard of such testimony going in evidence. If the issue were a different issue, that is whether a safety belt would have prevented an issue, yes, then you need such a person. But I think the doctor is fully qualified to testify how, and it was excluded, how this kind of injury occurs, and that from what he had a description of the collision, that in his opinion this caused it.
Well, the testimony that got in, as I understand, was, look, before the accident, he didn't have the TMJ problem.
Yes.
And what was admitted was that the TMJ injury was most likely caused by this accident. That got in.
Yes.
And this discussion about the mechanism is what we're battling about.
Yes, because the injury is so unusual, it felt it necessary for the jury to understand the basis of the doctor's conclusion. And if he could show to the jury how, when the head goes backward and forward in such an accident, how that disc gets injured, I think that's essential for a jury to be able to understand, because of the argument of counsel, skillfully done, that we have not proved how that disc could get injured by a stroke from the rear, by a whiplash. And that, I thought, was essential testimony.
It's important as to what got in and what got out, because otherwise the argument is that what was left out, was excluded, is harmless. So you did get in testimony from the doctor that the whiplash was causal.
Yes.
What you didn't get in was a discussion of how the head works and how the jaw works. So
exactly.
And how that could have been affected by whiplash.
That's right.
Okay.
And the jury found no cause, and I believe it was clearly because they didn't understand, they never heard of a temporal mandibular joint being injured in a whiplash.
Thank you, Mr. Gretzner.
Thank you.
You will have 5 minutes in rebuttal. Mr. Tuskowski, representing Bruce A. Ripp et al.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. I'm Ted Muskowski. I'm here on behalf of the defendants. With me today is Laura Skilton-Verhoff. I think it's important to understand that this is exclusion of evidence appeal only. That's all that was appealed by the plaintiff. And I think really there's two parts to it, and you want to focus on the mechanism, which I think is important. But what was excluded here was that the court did not allow the dentist to testify about the precise mechanism that occurred in this accident. Not only was Dr. Ryan allowed to testify that the accident caused the TMJ problem, in his opinion, but plaintiff's other dentist, there was another dentist who testified the same. And they had a basis to do that, and they were allowed to do it by the court.
Mr. Oskowski?
Yes, sir.
I'm somewhat confused. It seems to me, as I was reading this, reading the briefs in preparation, that what the doctor was trying to do was not explain how the accident caused TMJ, but how whiplash causes TMJ. Am I right or wrong?
I think that the whiplash mechanism in this accident is what was trying to explain in this precise accident. And I think it's important to get a context of what...
How can that be? I mean, what the doctor was saying is when your head goes backwards and forwards like this, he's not saying that when a car causes your head to go backwards and forwards like this. He's saying when your head goes back and forth like this, that causes whiplash. Whiplash then in turn can cause TMJ.
But that's not what was attempted here. What was attempted here is Mr. Grutzner appeared with a very large, scary-looking, in my view, prejudicial chart that showed a head being whipped back and forth. And he was prepared to have the doctor say, this is what happened in this accident. And that's the point that I objected. I objected to the use of that because to pull out a chart and say, this is exactly what happened to this man in the accident, requires accident reconstruction expertise by someone. Now, perhaps Dr. Ryan could have provided it, but he knew nothing about the accident.
How can an accident reconstruction expert explain how whiplash causes TMJ?
An accident reconstruction expert or a biomechanical person, or perhaps someone knowledgeable in the medical field with sufficient foundation, might be able to show how when you have these two vehicles colliding at this speed, that have this weight at this angle, and you have someone in a vehicle that has a seat of this type, that is or is not wearing a seatbelt, that is or is not of this size, that this is what would, in my opinion, happen to his head. That's the problem. The problem is that the dentist attempted with Mr. Grutzner to testify to precisely what happened to Mr. Martindale in this accident. And that's what I objected to, and that's what the judge at that point said, there's no foundation for this. These are accident reconstruction opinions that are being given without any investigation being done first.
Well, is there any question that his head went back and forth?
I think the record indicates that the plaintiff was, in fact, quite vague and confused as to what exactly happened to his body in the accident. However, I think what's important is that there wasn't an attempt by plaintiff to say, this is what my client says happened. Is that consistent, for example? He could have done this. He could have said, is that consistent with something else? That is frequently an efficient way to get the doctor to explain. The problem here was not prohibiting the doctor from explaining. The problem here was having the doctor testify to things that he couldn't possibly know. That was the problem. And on that, the court certainly has wide discretion as to what foundation is required for a expert opinion, and the judge, in this case, I think very thoughtfully, very carefully, we had two separate hearings before trial on this issue, carefully applied the law, and I think made a correct decision. Excuse me, Your Honor.
Okay. Did you defend this case on the basis that the plaintiff did not suffer any sort of a whiplash injury at all?
I defended this case on the basis that my basic closing argument was if you don't know what happened to the plaintiff, if you don't know and have to guess what his injury was, then the answer to the cause question is no. That was my defense.
Okay.
And I think it was very, very difficult to ferret out, and it would have been very difficult for a jury to say, we're comfortable to a reasonable certainty that we know what happened. That was my argument in the closing argument.
Was there any denial on your part, on behalf of your client, that the plaintiff suffered a whiplash injury here? Or was it all defense focused on whether the whiplash motion of the head in an accident of this sort can cause TMJ problems? That's what I'm trying to get at.
Well, I didn't focus on the whiplash, in my view, at least. I didn't focus on the whiplash, whether it occurred, and exactly what happened. I think that the evidence as to what exactly happened from the plaintiff's standpoint was very confused. And so I focused on the burden of proof, that the plaintiff needs to prove his case.
But was there any contrary evidence?
I called no witnesses at the trial.
Okay.
I cross-examined the plaintiff, only through the cross-examination of the plaintiff.
Okay.
And what was your theme in cross-examination, that he had had jaw and mouth problems previously?
Yes. My theme, what I tried to discuss with the jury through the cross-examination of Mr. Martindale, was if Mr. Martindale was really having the problems complained of, then he was acting inconsistently with that. He was not following his dentist's advice. He was given a splint that he apparently did not use. He was given medicine that he apparently did not take. He was asked to call the dentist and apparently did not do so. He was told if he had problems to give follow-up, to come back and we'll look at you again, and he did not do that. And so I was arguing through that cross-examination that he was acting inconsistently with someone who actually had the injury. What I also tried to point out, and I think I did point out in cross-examination, was that many of the visits that Mr. Martindale made, which related to the TMJ, seemed to exactly coincide with, it's time now to answer interrogatories, it's time to meet with the lawyer, it's time to have your deposition taken, because the trial was delayed, I did a follow-up deposition, it's time to have a follow-up deposition taken, and now we're about to go to trial. And so I drew a chart, I don't remember if it was in the cross or if it was in the closing, that tried to demonstrate to the jury that the injuries of which the plaintiff complained were more closely related to the fact that the litigation was ongoing than the fact that he was suffering pain in any particular time. The links seemed to be to the lawsuit rather than to complaints of pain or problems, and that was and it led to the concluding argument, which is we have to guess. If you have to guess, then the answer is no. Excuse me, Your Honor.
Concerns of lingering aside, I want to address a legal issue.
Yes.
As I understand what was, the expert wanted to testify to how the whiplash mechanism caused the TMJ. And that was excluded for lack of foundation. Is that correct? Or lack of qualification?
I think that either way would be foundation. I also was making prejudicial arguments because it all started from the big chart.
Okay. With regard to the lack of foundation, the paragraph 8 of the Court of Appeals opinion seems to say or suggest that, quote, apparently he never inspected Martindale's car or a similar model and knew nothing about Martindale's movements or what happened to him or the car at and after the moment of impact. Do you believe the Court of Appeals opinion is correct that in order for an expert to testify how the whiplash mechanism causes TMJ, that a requisite foundation is that he inspects the car or a similar model and knows about the movements or what happened to him or the car at and after the moment of impact?
I think, Your Honor, that foundation can be laid in many different ways. And it is laid in many different ways. Because it can be laid in so many different ways, I think this Court has recognized over and over again that we need to leave what is an appropriate foundation in any particular case to the trial court judge who's sitting there to do that particular job. Now, that being said, in this case, what was attempted was that the dentist was not going to talk generally in some fashion, but had this large chart purporting to show precisely what happened to Mr. Martindale in this accident, and the judge said he doesn't have a sufficient basis, he doesn't have a sufficient foundation to describe that this is what happened in this accident.
And that in order to be able to describe how the whiplash mechanism causes TMJ, he would have to do what?
He could, could the plaintiff have described how what happened to the plaintiff, you know, how to relate that mechanism? There could have been an attempt in this case to say, now, I want you to assume, for example, that my client is going to testify in this way or that way. Now, given that, is the injury that that you found consistent with that description, and the doctor would say, may say yes, and therefore you can go on from there and do description. That wasn't attempted, and that's the point I think is really, really important. Was attempted was, here's the big chart, here's what happened to my client, and the judge properly said, look, you know,
With all due respect,
yes.
What happened was he said he knew that he had been hit by a garbage truck behind.
Yes.
He knew he was 6'7". He knew he was in the bind. And he said that he viewed this as a whiplash. Whiplash to me, in ordinary common parlance, means that your head is shaken forward and backwards. Can't tell you how far forward or backwards. Can't tell you how fast, but faster than you want. Okay? That's whiplash. That's what the doctor knew. Is that a good enough foundation for saying on the basis of being hit from the rear by a bigger vehicle, to take judicial notice, garbage truck loaded is bigger than a Bonneville. I can take that common experience, right? Right?
Well, Your Honor, I think I'm back at your description of whiplash, which I think needs to be described, because there are a variety of things that can happen depending on the angle of impact, depending on the speed, and depending on the
but my head's going to move. Unless I'm strapped in at the head, my head's going to move.
Yes.
And if I'm 6'7" and the headrest is too low, I don't have an arch in the back of me. I don't have something in the back of me to stop the head backwards. Right?
We don't know in this vehicle, but that's...
That's what he says, 6'7". Yeah. And there was at least some testimony that you didn't have it. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, just on common sense, just on that, can a doctor testify with that as a foundation, assuming the struck from the rear, assuming your head is moved backwards and forwards, can that cause, to a reasonable medical degree of certainty, can that cause TMJ? Can he answer that?
You're saying, can he answer? I don't think...
Will you object? That's my question. I mean, you may not like it, but do you have a valid objection?
I think if there was foundation that the person didn't have it before, here's the injury I found. I think a doctor, for example, could testify that here's the injury I found. Injuries like this can be caused by trauma. They can be caused by the head being thrashed about. I reviewed the medical records. I've discussed it with this person. It's my impression that this accident caused this man's TMJ problem. I think that that can go into evidence, and in fact, it did go into evidence in this case. That's my answer. And again, I come back to
I want the jury to understand how. What was that song about? One bone connected to the other bone. I want the jury to understand how this biological mechanism is affected, now it's connected to movement of the head as a general medical matter. Can't the doctor testify as to that?
Or can't the doctor say if you move my elbow back 45 degrees, it's going to crack? Because that's how the elbow is built. It moves this way, but it doesn't move that way. Can't a doctor testify to that? I mean, obviously, the elbow, I'll know. But I don't understand the jaw.
Well, in fact, there is an exhibit that got into evidence where the doctor did draw the TMJ joint and did have an opportunity to discuss it in general if plaintiff took that opportunity.
Where was that?
I believe it was Exhibit 7.
This one?
Yes.
Mine says diagram excluded.
The one with the where he drew the not the complications, where he drew the diagram of the TMJ joint.
I'll check that. Was excluded.
I'm speaking from memory, and I'm not sure that I'm right. But,
all right.
But
he let that all in.
Yeah, but you know, he could get in. And my argument is not that you can't talk generally, that you couldn't have more description with what occurred. My problem with what happened, and the reason why I objected, is the doctor was trying to describe precisely what happened here.
Counsel, let's take this case, everything the same, every detail the same, with this exception. The doctor is an orthopedic, no TMJ injury, but there's the whiplash with pain between C5 and 6. Now that is bread and butter. That is the kind of case that you see all the time.
Okay.
My concern is this case doesn't just deal with an oral surgeon and a TMJ injury, that it deals with the orthopedic doctor who's testifying about whiplash and how the pain in the area or the problems in the area of C5 and C6 were caused by the whiplash. As I said, bread and butter. Is it your position, as you answered the chief's questions, that before that doctor should be able to testify, that he should know something about what happened, that is the angle of impact and the speed of the cars? I mean, this, in order for him to be able to say, whiplash caused this pain that never existed before the accident, that it exists now. Angle of impact and the biomechanics of the accident?
I think I can explain exactly what it is that I'm trying to explain. And that is, if you want to put before the jury something that says this man's head went this far, if you want to do that, then you have to have a basis. If you want to put that evidence in front of the jury and say, here's a picture of how far this man's head went in the impact of the accident, then at that point I think it's my obligation to object, unless the doctor or whomever is trying to put in this opinion can offer a foundation that he knows that to be the case. And that's what happened here.
Maybe I just have been operating under the wrong assumptions. You know, maybe everything that I was involved in was wrong. But it was common for an orthopedic doctor to testify. Rear end, whiplash, constant. Pain in the neck, literally. That's just all the time. And in those cases, I don't recall the doctor having to testify to the extent of the flexion or extension of the neck based on 25 miles or 35 miles, based on the impact coming at a 45-degree angle from the right rear bumper. none of that stuff. You know, the doctor doesn't know any of that stuff, but still could testify to it. So what am I missing?
I'm not suggesting that a doctor can't. And in many trials, the doctor will say, you know, describe whiplash to us. What happens is the head gets moved forward and back. You know, do you think that's what happened here? Yes, that's what I think would happen here. It would cost. That wasn't attempted. What was attempted was the chart that said, here's exactly what happened, here's exactly going back, and that was the problem. There was no testimony for that chart. And I think you're going to probably see this in future cases, because there are now cases being tried where people are attempting to introduce a videotape of supposedly what happens during whiplash, and there are foundational objections being made, and those cases are being sorted out now. But if you want to talk in general, here's generally what happens, and here's what it can be the result. That's one thing. If you want to say here's precisely what happened in this accident, then you need a foundation to do it.
Well, this is what bothers me about the case, because when I read the Court of Appeals decision, it seemed to me that in every case, you'd have to spend more money and expenses of bringing in all these reconstruction people than you'll ever get in damages. And I agree with you about whether the doctor is talking about this particular case and how far the head goes, or just generally what would happen. But I'm looking at page 4 of the Court of Appeals decision. It says that Ryan then testified that the illustration, quote, would depict what could happen in a whiplash injury. And I have no other reason to believe that Martindale had an injury to his jaw other than whiplash. Since I've already testified to think the accident caused this problem, this is the mechanism of, I believe, and then it goes on, internal joint derangement. Seems to me you could argue Ryan knew about the accident. This is what could happen in a whiplash injury, namely the derangement of these organisms. And that he says Martindale didn't have any other injury beforehand. Therefore, he says, I think it's good enough. I don't see what's the matter with that. Now, I don't want to be thick, and I don't want to continue it beyond the pale, but it's a very important case just for the reasons you've set forth.
Well, I think you start out with, and the reason why I objected was you start out with the proposition, here's what could happen, which, of course, when you're sitting at table, you are, your ears come up when people start talking about coulds and mites and possibilities, and that's what caused me to listen. But Dr. Ryan, I think in the passage that you just described, very, very skillfully, because he's testified a number of times, very skillfully went from, this is what could happen, this is what did happen in this case, and that's where I drew the line. I think it's important to remember that it wasn't that there wasn't testimony as the cause. Two dentists testified to that.
Well, you're an experienced trial lawyer, as your other counsel. I want you to tell me how you think we should write this case, so that we would say and give advice to future litigants as to what doctors can and cannot testify to. This is to your interest. Do you represent plaintiffs too?
Yes, I do.
So your interest here is just getting good law?
Yes.
Okay. So what would be good law for us to write that relates to how the foundation should be laid and what doctors could testify? And just let's use this case.
Okay. I think that doctors should be certainly allowed to offer medical opinions. If you want my opinion as to the law in Wisconsin, doctors go quite far afield very often. But in this case, I think that we have a case which is really really standard Wisconsin practice. He didn't have the doctor testify. We didn't have complaints before. I've looked at the records. I don't see any complaints of TMJ. It can be caused by trauma. It can be caused by whiplash-type things. There were complaints after the accident. I've examined the man. I found that he does have a problem. He had clicking after the accident. And therefore, I conclude that it was this accident which caused his problem.
Can you show a picture of the head?
Excuse me?
Can you show a picture of a head?
Well, I think...
Show where TMJ is...
Yes, and I think... Yes, many do testify with a picture.
Could he testify that in his judgment, or in his opinion, the accident caused the whiplash?
I think if you want to talk about the whiplash, then I think the doctor probably should be informed in the hypothetical that, assuming that this is the testimony, then along with the other things that I mentioned, assuming the testimony of the man is this, then what is your opinion? And again, I don't want to be beating a dead horse, although it's bad, I might as well take one more kick. That's not what was attempted here.
Okay. But then can he also, he's got this photo or drawing of the head showing the jaw and its mechanisms. Can he then show a photo of a head in a forward position and what happens to those mechanisms, and in a backwards position showing what happens to those mechanisms, and saying that that kind of movement can dislocate or derange?
I think what you have to do now, when you get into, well, now you're starting to go from the general to the very specific.
No, I'm doing general.
Okay.
Just,
well,
generally, as a general matter, the general matter, this kind of thing can affect the joint.
To my ear, but as a general matter, you're fine. And people talking in general, generally speaking, are okay. Where the difficulty comes is when you start moving from the general to the quite specific, like the doctor did in that one little passage that you read to me, I think. And there you have trial judges throughout the state who you have said they should be the ones to judge what's the appropriate foundation, what's sufficient foundation for an expert's testimony. You give them wide discretion. You do it for good reasons. In this particular case, the confidence was well placed. Judge Dahlberg knows evidence as well as anybody
Counsel,
in the state.
But how can, you've already said there's been cause, this testimony that got in, and I don't know if it's objected to, but it's in, that the TMJ was cause. There's causal evidence to say that the whiplash caused the TMJ or the accident caused the TMJ. I mean, how can you establish cause if you can't testify to the mechanism of what was going on in the disc?
Okay. If you want to do that in this case, put your big scary chart down and talk in general terms. That's what the judge was reacting
but
to.
But the testimony was not can, in a hypothetical world, whiplash cause TMJ. The testimony was the TMJ of this plaintiff was caused, as I understand it, was caused by the whiplash accident. So you already have, it's the TMJ of this defendant was causal. If he can testify to causation, why can't he testify to what's going on to cause it in the defendant's jaw?
Because when you go to when you go from the general to the specific, that's where I think the trial court has to exercise the discretion. If you want to talk about how much force is applied to one particular place and what that causes something to do in terms of movement,
it seems to me it's kind of like, was this plaintiff's TMJ caused, doctor, was it caused by the whiplash? Yes, it is. That's admitted. Can you tell us why? Oh, I can't tell you. why it was caused or how it was caused, but I can just give you the ultimate opinion. That doesn't make sense.
Well, I think in this particular case, the doctor did not know how exactly it happened. I think that he could, however, and courts frequently do, be allowed to testify that here's the testimony, is this type of injury consistent with this type of accident? And after the doctor leaves that area and starts talking about, you know, the physical dynamics, the biomechanics, the physics, and so forth, I think that the trial court should be instructed to look carefully and to make sure there's foundation for the doctors to go beyond that point.
Hugh, or a couple of real quick questions. Was the injury of whiplash itself an issue in this case, or was it solely the injury to the jaw that was an issue?
Well, there was, and that's I'm glad you asked, because on the whiplash point, medical records were admitted as to the fact that the plaintiff claimed a more typical or atypical whiplash soft tissue neck injury, and there was evidence introduced on that subject.
Did the doctor testify to it?
He didn't call a doctor. He didn't call a medical doctor.
It was just the plaintiff.
Just the two dentists.
And the medical records were in the medical records establishing medical records addressing whiplash were received into the record.
I apologize for not having checked this, but I believe so. Before I came, I believe so.
Mr. Wazowski, you made the closing argument at trial?
I did.
Did you say, and I'm quoting from page 22 of Mr. Gretzner's brief, we have a highly qualified doctor, and we have a good, honest dentist, Dr. Clark, and neither of them made any attempt at all to describe how it is that this jaw problem resulted from the accident?
If you're reading through that, I'm sure I did. Let me tell you what I was referring to. I'm referring...
That's the usual Wednesday at noon alarm. It's a test. If not, we'll advise you otherwise. Go ahead.
Argument, did you also say nobody even bothered to try to explain what happened? Are those fair comments given what happened here?
My objection to the testimony was to an attempt to show with this child the very specific mechanism of this specific accident. Mr. Gretzner or his dentist made any attempt to talk about trauma to the TMJ joint in general, which certainly would have been permitted, I think, by this judge. Talked about TMJ, and that was it. Now, that could have been done. The doctor could have been called. Any dentist could have. He had the ruling months before the trial. If he wanted to have somebody come in and try to lay more foundation or try to actually explain to him what happened or to get more evidence, he couldn't have nobody even tried to do that.
Well, counsel, you're ending up with a big noise, but thank you for your argument. Mr. Gretzner, you have 5 minutes in rebuttal.
First of all, very quickly, there was a diagram drawn by the doctor, which is in the appendix at page 184, and that was drawn by the doctor for the patient in the doctor's office to try to show to the patient the manner in which the joint was damaged. However, we're all familiar with doctor's handwriting. This one doesn't help very much. It shows some bones and a disc within those bones, but it doesn't truly show how it happens. So yes, there was such a drawing, and that drawing was in fact admitted.
What page?
Regarding the specific, first of all, the doctor gave his opinion regarding the cause of the collision, the cause of the injury. Specifically, my impression would be that the accident is what caused the displacement of the discs of his joint. That was neither objected to nor later stricken by the court at any time. My position that having given that opinion and having been qualified to give that opinion, he certainly is qualified to explain how he arrived at that opinion. Page 36 of the doctor's deposition, which is exhibit 63, we now got the drawing of the three positions of the head in front of him, and this was stricken. And I asked him about the positions, and he said, that means the jaw is swung forward, it moves out where it normally is swung forward, and it's done very rapidly, so that you get a separation of the disc from the lower jawbone. Question. First, and do you have an opinion as to whether or not that is what occurred in the injury of that Bruce Martindale sustained? Answer, I think it did, yes. That was stricken. It was not allowed. Next page. At the bottom of page 36, he answers, and what happens then? The lower jaw is thrown back at this point, and it gets caught back in front of the disc. As we can see here, the disc is trapped in front. We now have stretching of this ligament or tearing of this ligament, and that's the mechanism you end up with the disc being displaced. Question. And do you have an opinion as to whether or not that occurred to Bruce Martindale at the time of the, when the garbage truck struck him from the rear? Answer, I think it is, yes. And at 30, that was the one. The point is that having been allowed to testify as to the cause of the collision, he certainly can explain the manner in which that occurred.
If I could clarify, counsel, the last page of the appendix, number 158, with the handwritten drawing, is this the drawing that's been referred to, the fixed carry drawing?
This is a drawing.
Would you stand before the microphone, please? Stand before the microphone.
I'm sorry, you told me twice.
Admitted, was the last page, number 7, admitted?
Yes, it was.
That was admitted.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, the drawing at exhibit 158. Of the
you're saying it was admitted, that went into evidence, that drawing.
Just one, 158.
Right here. The exhibit shown at page 158 of the plaintiff's appendix was not admitted in evidence.
That's the one to which I was referring previously.
It was not admitted. In fact, the one
at 154, the hand-drawn one.
Yes.
Was that admitted?
Yes, it was. The doctor was allowed to testify that he had shown him how it happened
and made that drawing.
And made that drawing in the doctor's office. The trial court did not say that he was excluding the evidence because the doctor did not know anything about the crash. We don't have time, but if you look at the objections made by the doctor to those portions of the testimony of Dr. Ryan, there were other reasons given. The doctor was not competent. I have them in my brief. It is true that counsel for the defendant argued that if you don't know what the injury was, you're going to have to guess. And it's true that he said there was absolutely no effort made by either of the two doctors to tell you how this accident happened. I thought that opened the door on final argument,
And I said, I'll tell you, and at this point, I was not allowed to speak further on that point. The fact that there was a delay... Ma'am?
The red light is on.
Thank you. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Counsel. Any further questions? Hearing none, that concludes 99-06-49 Martin.